You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome back to Let's Talk Macro, your podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we, as always, discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events, anything that's relevant to you getting the big picture on global macroeconomics. I'm Mahalia, your co-host, and I've got with me Srijit Balasubramanian, senior economist in the fixed income fund management team. Welcome, Srijit. How are you?
I'm good, Mahalia. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. And Srijit, you know, in our previous episode, we talked about the positives for India from the US-Iran ceasefire agreement to end the war. Yeah. But maybe that was a bit premature because, unfortunately, tensions have flared up again. The agreement has been revoked and strikes have resumed. Shipping through the Strait of Hormuz has fallen considerably and shipping even through the Red Sea route has now been challenged. So needless to say, crude oil prices have picked up yet again. Against this backdrop, today's discussion is going to be about the global and Indian macroeconomic situation and outlook that we can expect. So let's start with the West Asia conflict, as good a place to start as any. How do you see the latest situation and, you know, the developments as the strikes have resumed and shipping has been challenged again? What can we expect?
Okay, so we discussed last month about the economic linkages to the world. I mean, not just for oil and gas, but for various industrial inputs that are shipped through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, with re-escalation, worries about inflation and on availability are back. Oil prices, like you said, are up, but continues to be a bit volatile. And after the ceasefire agreement was signed, oil prices had fallen to the 70s, right, in dollar per barrel. In fact, surprising everyone by the rate and magnitude of the fall. Now, this picked up to, you know, over $100 again and has now retreated to sort of the 80s. Range, given the pause in strikes. And again, there seems to be some resurgence in strikes as we speak. But that's where we are today. And 12-month oil future prices also, you know, market's expectation of where crude oil prices would be 12 months, that is 1 year from now, have also risen from the, you know, the recent low that we saw. So if the overall or the broad pause in strikes were to stick and the Red Sea shipping route doesn't get majorly challenged or it sort of opens up, then we could see further moderation in oil prices. But there are, you know, multiple factors. You know, one is obviously geopolitics. The other is that we had seen China lowering its crude oil purchases quite a bit, you know, even earlier when crude oil prices had fallen.
Right.
And instead it was using their reserves. So we'll have to see whether that changes, you know, whether, you know, that continues or not. And we should factor that in when we look at the oil price trajectory. The other thing to note, particularly for, you know, some of the other countries like US, for instance, is that, you know, prices of petroleum products have been quite high despite crude oil prices coming lower. And this is, again, due to various factors like, you know, lower exports of petro products by China, lower output by global refineries, again, lower inventories, for instance, of gasoline compared to last year levels, and even government policies to curtail some of the price hikes of these petroleum products, which sort of keeps consumer demand fairly robust, you know, therefore the demand doesn't come off that much. So these are some of the things that we need to, you know, watch out for where oil is headed.
Yeah, so overall crude oil prices are back up, although there has been some respite after the pause in strikes. Let's hope, fingers crossed once again, that the situation improves. But Srijit, how will major central banks also be reacting to these new developments, right? Do you think they're going to be more worried now about inflation and maybe therefore look at any interest rate action in the immediate future?
Yeah, so that's the important question, you know, how central banks are going to see this and whether they're going to react or not. Now, oil price is one factor which passes through to retail prices of fuel. But like we've discussed before, it could also impact prices of food, for instance, through transportation and even various other goods. So central banks look at the persistence of a supply shock like this, you know, whether it spills over to core inflation, whether it spills over to wage growth, essentially whether the supply problem becomes a demand problem. And any action is warranted if it is expected to spill over, therefore. So we must keep watching that and whether that happens or not. And if you take the US, for example, the inflation there is above the 2% target. It's been above 2% for quite some time. But if you see the latest inflation prints, for instance, the June readings, you know, that's a price to the downside, both the producer and consumer levels. And this was not, again, driven not just by the fall in energy prices, even core measures moderated. And more importantly, markets' inflation expectations measured from inflation swaps have actually been moderating for quite some time now. So the recent rise in the two-year US Treasury yields that we've been seeing have been actually driven by upward growth surprises, you know, which is reflected in higher real yields. So it's not just inflation that is driving markets' expectation of rate hikes this year by the Fed. And the situation is actually a bit delicate in the US because inflation is above 2%, but recent prints have moved a bit lower than expectation. Labor market has been resilient, you know, with unemployment rate and unemployment insurance falling, but wage growth is at pre-pandemic levels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, personal savings have also fallen. And growth, if you see, is quite robust, but again, narrowly driven by AI-related investments with the K-shape there sort of continuing. And again, so therefore, the Fed's meeting yesterday decided to hold rates, you know, although it was a 9-3 split vote. And the Fed reiterated its commitment to price stability and the 2% inflation target. Mm-hmm. And the Fed chair, in fact, noted that the market had already tightened financial conditions through the higher two-year yields. Right. And we also have the task forces which will submit their reports by the year end. Therefore, after the Fed meeting, if you see the two-year yield has fallen because it's probably, you know, likely reflecting the Fed's slightly patient approach and its reaction function that the market has gauged.
Right.
But the 30-year yields have actually moved up. The longer end ones have moved up, probably reflecting some of the concerns in terms of the impact in the longer run on the economy. So we have to see how the market continues to react to this Fed's seemingly patient approach. The other major central banks, for instance, the European Central Bank hiked once and then mm-hmm. it paused hawkishly at the latest meeting. Now, we have to see whether they again hike or not. Japan is on a completely different trajectory with the central bank already on a hiking cycle. And the question there is, you know, how fast and how much, depending on the inflation wage cycle continuing. And also, again, the other important factor there being the fiscal expansion.
So oil price is a consideration for central banks, but second order effects matter as well while the underlying economic dynamics play out. Another major factor has been AI. We talked about this in our previous podcast as well, our previous episode. And, you know, you mentioned how it's narrowly driving growth in the US. What is your sense on how it's playing out at the current time?
So with AI, I think there is no uncertainty whether AI raises productivity and aids growth. The uncertainty is on the scale or the timing of adoption across, you know, sectors and within departments across enterprises. And the recent worry is about the magnitude of investments made by the big companies, right? For instance, the so-called hyperscalers like Meta, Google, Microsoft and Amazon. And also the wide gap with their free cash flows because now the debt issuance has risen sharply. So just to give an example, US corporate bond net issuance in the 12 months up to May this year is up 50% year on year, while that of treasury bonds and notes are actually down around 38 to 40%. So market worries have therefore manifested as a recent equity market corrections that we've seen in Korea and to some extent in the US. So the AI theme is essentially tied to the global interest rates. And for India, it has been a major challenge, like we know, in terms of global capital allocation theme, which has taken money away, creating capital account challenges for us. So we'll watch out for any change or easing in the AI theme. There have been some corrections of late, but we keep watching that closely. And if there is any easing, you know, that would probably bring some relief to India's market yields.
Yeah, well, I mean, AI is such a relatively new disruption, right? So there are going to be some worries there on the pace of AI investments and the associated leverage. Hopefully, there is a path there that flows better into India. Meanwhile, India also announced various measures to attract capital inflows like the RBI's swap facilities for FCNR deposits and external commercial borrowings, as well as the tax exemption on capital gains and interest for investment in government securities by FPIs. How is that coming along, given it's almost 2 months now since the announcements were made? We did touch upon this previously as well.
Yeah, so the schemes and tax exemptions were announced on the 5th of June. And according to an RBI press release, that we now have banks mobilized around $21 billion US dollars till 17th of July, of which more than $17 billion was only from FCNR deposit. And in a recent interview, the RBI governor said $32 billion have been raised, again, mostly through the FCNR scheme. So this sort of put to rest, you know, recent market worries that external inflows could be lower than initially expected. The FCNR scheme is there till end of September, so we have roughly about 2 months left. And the external commercial borrowing, that is the ECB scheme, is till the end of December, so around 5 months left there. So pace of inflows should definitely gather pace in the next few months. And for the FCNR, we have also discussed and, you know, sort of compared it to the 2013 scheme, and towards the second half, the pace is actually gathered. And as we discussed, this is crucial to manage our external account in the near term, right? So two things to watch out. Again, you know, one is on the numbers, but the other two things to watch out are really on the impact on reserves and liquidity that the RBI will have to look out for. The RBI has short dollar forward positions, which it could choose to extinguish against the flows that it receives. Now, this will not change the total reserves when you look at it, you know, when you adjust it for forward positions, that is. But how much forward positions it allows to mature could depend on various factors, you know, including rupee premium for various tenures, which will impact hedging behavior, any spot FX intervention that the RBI does that is required, and so on. So, for instance, sustained period of US dollar strength can be challenging for rupee because you know, that is a major factor for the currency, even as inflows pick up. Elevated geopolitical tensions and negative sentiment can add pressure on the rupee through hedging behavior by exporters and importers, and we've seen that before. So we'll have to sort of see the impact of all this on the banking system liquidity as well. If RBI is able to allow a good part of its short forward positions to mature, that will automatically absorb excess liquidity from these foreign inflows, and therefore the RBI may not have to use other tools. But this can be dynamic, right? Depending on, like I said, geopolitics and strength of the dollar. So that we'll have to keep looking at. The other aspect, again, from a banking system perspective, is the credit deposit ratio of banks. Because the schemes announced sort of help banks mobilize foreign deposits at a time. The credit deposit ratio, the CD ratio, has been elevated. So with most of the flows likely happening this quarter, the September quarter, the incremental CD ratio could ease. Right. And if working capital requirement of banks, which picked up after the US-Iran war started, if that moderates and even the loans backed by the government's credit guarantee scheme for MSMEs, that also sort of settles down, because already I think 1.5 lakh crore out of the 2.5 lakh crore has been approved or disbursed. If that sort of happens, then credit growth could sort of moderate from its highs. Sort of, again, both helping ease the CD ratio of the banking system.
So schemes to attract foreign capital seems to be working well and should pick up pace in the next few months. Of course, like you said, the RBI will have to manage its FX intervention and reserves and banking system liquidity as well. So how does all of this, that is the latest situation on the war front, AI, and the schemes, add up to your view on monetary and fiscal policy overall? What do you expect from the next RBI policy meeting, Srijit?
So our broad view hasn't really changed. We don't expect the RBI to hike at its August meeting, which is next week. And it could hike by max 50 basis points this fiscal year. I mean, that is if it hikes at all. I mean, I'm saying that because market is debating whether hikes are needed at all, given moderate nominal growth and external risks that we just discussed. And of course, there is risk if higher oil prices persist and from lower monsoon rainfall this year due to the ongoing El Nino. So those are definitely risks for inflation. And if you see the inflation estimates for the second half of this fiscal, so that's higher. So that's one of the factors behind our view. On fiscal, our view remains that broadly, expenditure management and utilization of the so-called economic stabilization fund, that should suffice. And if you look at the revenue growth numbers that are required to achieve the budgeted estimates, that growth required is not very high, for instance, for tax revenue, etc., which is, when you compare it to the normal GDP growth. Again, we keep watching that space. So even with a 20 to 30 basis points fiscal slippage, like I said last time, we don't see higher GSEC borrowing this year.
So essentially, the broad view on monetary and fiscal policy remains the same. And in the meantime, we're just going to have to navigate uncertainty, which at this point seems to have become the only certainty we can rely on when it comes to, the world and macroeconomics with it, of course. So with that, it's time for me to summarize the key takeaways from today's conversation. First point of note, crude oil prices fell to pre-war levels after the US-Iran ceasefire, but picked up again as tensions flared up and is now lower in the 80s after the pause in strikes. Globally, prices of petroleum products seem to be having more pressure than that of crude oil, but we have to see a host of factors to assess the price trajectory. Meanwhile, oil prices could be volatile. Second point to note, crude oil price is one factor that feeds into central bank decision-making, but assessment of persistence and spillover to core inflation and wage growth matters greatly as well. In the US, growth, inflation, labor market situation remains quite delicate, and the recent rise in rate expectations have been driven not by inflation fears, but rather by upward growth surprises. So possibility of the Fed being on hold is also material. And while AI continues to drive growth, concerns about adoption and leveraged funding have risen, which is something to keep tabs on for relief to India's market yields. And finally, in India, the schemes to garner capital flows are working well and should pick up further. This should help ease banks' credit deposit ratio in the near term, but the RBI will have to dynamically manage its FX intervention, reserves, and banking system liquidity. All put together, the RBI may not hike at its August meeting. And this fiscal year, the RBI could hike by max 50 basis points if it hikes at all, and the central government is unlikely to borrow more than planned. Quite the rundown today, Srijit. Lots for us to keep an eye on, which just means lots to talk about next month. So thank you so much for taking us through all of that.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be back with another episode of Let's Talk Macro. Until then, bye-bye.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.